You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Working with people in poverty is central to spiritual practices, but how do we do it challenges us all, poor and non-poor alike. When you see poverty in a neighborhood, whether it's urban or rural, do you assume that the people living there just don't have what it takes to improve their lives? Most cities develop a poor neighborhood by gentrifying it with lots of financial investment and new buildings. But that displaces all the people and businesses who were there before. Where do they go? There's also the argument that poor people simply have to help themselves, that aid takes away their incentive to improve their situation. What approach do you believe works best? Stay with us to hear an approach that really does change people as well as their situations. Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
Greetings to you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. Well, you know, it's such a treat in these podcast episodes as we talk to these people. And each person that we talk to really does know and show that another world is possible. And then that treat compounds like compounding interest because we get to share these conversations with listeners. So now we're going to kick off another year, 2021, and we're doing it by podcasting with Grace Durness as our guest. Grace has been a great advocate for Jubilee in recent years. I first met her a decade ago while she was still at the University of California, and since then, our friendship has grown, and she's visited the Jubilee circles in both San Mateo and San Cristobal, Mexico. And she'll tell us a little bit about that in this conversation. She will also tell us a highly successful way to engage poverty. It is a topic that makes many people throw up their hands in hopelessness. It's also true that many nonprofits engage poverty through forms of relief that do not change either the people or their situation, but perpetuate it. Well, Grace will tell us a different way. One, let me say, that is also being practiced in the Jubilee circles in San Mateo and San Cristobal.
Well, if you look at the website of Hub Urban Initiatives, you'll find Grace there. Her bio reads as follows. Grace Roberts Durness is a community development consultant and professor. She has taught at the University of Southern California, Azusa Pacific University, and Fuller Theological Seminary, as well as institutions in the Philippines, Indonesia, and Kenya, with a focus on public service in an urban setting, social context of planning, community and transformational development, and sustainable tourism. Her approach has been to use advocacy planning and participatory approaches to engage people in communities in order to envision their own future and chart a path towards it. She has a graduate degree in urban anthropology from Atanao de Manila University and a doctorate in urban planning and development studies from the University of Southern California. Her doctorate work focused on the growth of the informal sector of the Los Angeles economy, particularly on a project with the city's street vendors. Grace has had many years of experience working in the nonprofit sector in developing nations and inner cities within the United States. For 8 years, she lived in Manila, the Philippines, where she lived among urban squatter women in order to better understand how they cope with life at the margins. For the past 20 years, she has been engaged in participatory action research and development in Kenya, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Djibouti, and the Philippines. It has been through these international and local experiences that she has gained a deeper understanding of what conditions are needed in order for communities to thrive and forge a sustainable future for the next generation. Let's get to that conversation that Lee had with Grace early in December 2020.
Well, welcome, Grace, to the Simpler One Earth Living podcast. And I just want to plunge right in with the signature of your emails, where it says very interestingly, I think, but I want you to unpack it, participatory research and development specialist. So I, there's lots of directions I imagine that people who do this might go, but tell us what emphasis you have, and I think it's going to be very interesting. So take off.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk about that. This is, you know, my master's degree is in urban anthropology, and my doctorate is in urban planning and development. And so my interest has been very much on cities and what goes on in cities, mm-hmm. and how we can make cities a place that is flourishing for all, not just for a few people. Now, obviously, that applies globally, and it doesn't apply just to cities, but that's my focus is cities. But particularly, I got involved in that when we lived in the Philippines and I was doing my master's degree, living in a squatter settlement. A squatter settlement is what now we would call more of an informal settlement, where people come and build their shacks on whatever piece of land they can find and try to eke out a living in the city through various precarious and marginal occupations. And many cities around the world really are about between 60 and 70, sometimes all the way up to 90% of the people in those cities live in these kind of situations.
Goodness.
And work in these precarious income generating activities. Mexico City is no exception, where, you know, you have many ciudades perdidas, you know, that are filled with people, perhaps not as precarious as some of the ones in other places, but still they are not what we would call flourishing. So I got involved in, after doing my research, my master's degree, I got involved in working on community development projects and saying, okay, I want to, you know, really help people to move beyond just subsistence level living and let these become better places of flourishing. And especially because my master's was targeting women and how their coping strategies were for living in these settlements, my whole focus since then has been on women in particular. Mm-hmm. And women's biggest concern, no matter whether it's in the Philippines or it's with the people I worked with in Africa or the people in Oakland, California, or here in Los Angeles, these women have two main concerns. They care about putting food on the table, and they care about the education of their children. And so they are very focused on how do they increase the income in their families in order to better the situation for their children. When husbands, if they even have a husband or a partner, mm-hmm. a common law partner, whatever it may be, are working in a precarious situation like construction sites or that, there is not much income. And so I began working in community development projects and encouraging nonprofit organizations to work in community development, and did quite a bit of work. And I, after the years went by, and then I was teaching in it when I got after my doctorate, and I was teaching at the University of Southern California and placing my students in Los Angeles in different areas for experience, service mm-hmm. learning opportunities, mm-hmm. I became more and more concerned that community development projects help a certain group, mm-hmm. but they don't necessarily really change the structures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't change the things that continue to keep people in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them do, and some of them branch into advocacy to try to change the laws and things like that. But in most developing countries, you know, the laws are not enforced, even should there be laws. And how do you make it so that people even know what's going on in their own cities? And so then I was asked to do things like evaluate what our group is doing. How can you help us think through better? So at that point, I really became very much engaged in saying, no. I'm not the expert here. The expert are the people living in the city,
okay,
in those areas. The experts are them. They understand what's happening. So let's find out how we can gain an understanding through their perception. And so I began to create avenues for myself to do participatory action research, in which I would train, hopefully I'll do it again after the pandemic is over. But for now, it's been, I've still been doing it by Zoom, interestingly enough, with some area, you know, some groups, one in South Africa, for example. And, but the idea is that teaching people within the community to learn how to gather information, to learn to really understand what is happening. Because once they gather that and then can analyze that information, they can then think strategically about what are the steps that we need to take to make our communities thrive, to make our communities a place where we all thrive.
And it has to be very empowering for the people that you work with when you in effect make them the experts, and you're just not just, but you become the facilitator of their expertise. Oh,
that is the most thrilling thing when you see it take off. And in some cases, you know, some of the so-called new researchers, you know, don't quite get it, and they kind of put their own answers in rather than really. So there's a lot of training that has to take place, right? Because they may think, oh, our, you know, if they say to the people, what is it that you really want in your community? Then they might offer a answer and say, don't you really want like a new well? And then if, no, you don't do that. You let them tell you what they really want, right? And learn from that. And actually, it's human nature. If you gain a little bit of knowledge, we think we become the experts and can tell others what the knowledge, you know, what we think is their situation. So that's part of what I do, is to try to train people to really listen and to know how to ask questions that will elicit the stories and that will elicit a way of reflecting back what's going on in their own community, and then saying, okay, let's look at all this that people have been telling, you know, all of us. And now what does this mean? And then knowing how to think it through and analyze it and see patterns and develop ways of saying, okay, well, maybe I need to take it. Maybe what we need to do as a community is really try to get the government to do XYZ for us. Let me give you an example. Would that help?
That'd be great. Because I want to say too, as you go along, you know, if you put community development on a continuum from, you alluded to the one, even when they're doing somewhat a kind of participatory research, how quickly the tendency is to move to an answer. And when I think about people with money who are going to do development, then they come in with so many answers. And in fact, people from Haiti have sometimes said, God save us from all these non-government organizations.
Oh my gosh.
That are coming in. Because Haiti is not developing self-reliance in that way, and resiliency. So what you're doing, and which you clearly, as you describe this, are piercing through a lot of more simplistic ways of doing development that are driven by answer-oriented approaches. And then if there's money to back it up, it's even more dangerous. And so anyway, I just want to point out a contrast.
Well, and I don't want to knock community development, because you do need community development, but right. it's how you go about it. So yeah. Let me give an example of where I really learned it, even although I was studying in the Philippines, you know, in a very, very good Jesuit university and had amazing mentors that were guiding me, who to this day are still my mentors, you know. And I'm on in a couple of groups with my former teacher, professor, Dr. Mary Braselis from Philippines. Mm-hmm. So she's still teaching me all these years later, and she's 85 and going strong still. But she came to me with Mexico once. Not that she came with me. We were both there at the same time, and so I tagged along her. So one woman that was doing really successful work in the squatter settlement in Manila was a Canadian woman. Jan was her name. And I said to her, Jan, how do you get started? What is it that you do? Why does it work? You know, so I said, could you please invite me next time you're going to get started in a community so I can watch what happens? So she indeed called me one day and said, do you want to come with me? I'm going to this, you know, section of Manila where they now have seen what's happened over there and want it to happen where they are. So I went with her. And when we got there, they have this little community center, just basically a tin roof with four posts, you know, that kind of community center. And it was packed out, maybe about 40 people, all 40, 50 people sitting in there, all waiting for this Canadian, you know, expert to come in and help them. That was their idea. Help us, right? So she gets up, and it was kind of on the edges of the city. So there were some lots that were agriculturally, you know, it wasn't so dense that there were not enough space for growing things. But Jan gets up at the front, and then she said, okay, what is it you want? And they explained they want her to help them, you know, do some projects and so on and so forth. And she says, oh, okay. So what do you have? What do you have to start with? And there was silence. And then they said, no, Mom, you have to understand, we don't have anything. And she said, what? You know, and she's a very brash woman, which is not very Filipino. And, you know, but this is how she is. And she said, how can you call me to come here if you don't have anything? You know, and she says, you've got to have something. And then, no, ma'am, you don't understand. We are very, very poor. We don't have anything. That's why we asked you to come, because we don't have anything. And she said, well, we can't do anything if you don't have anything to start with. You know, we have to, what is it you have that we can take and use to begin? Absolutely, they had nothing. And so there's silence, and Jan starts looking around, and then she looks out the window and she says, oh, what's that man doing out there? And there was a man out there cutting the grasses for the cattle, and he was doing it with a machete, you know, a panga, they call it there in the Philippines. So he had a panga, and she said, what's that man doing out there? And they all look and they say, oh, he's cutting the grass. And she said, well, what's he using? And they said, he's using a panga. And so then she said, oh, really? Do any of you have pangas? And they said, yes. And she said, well, how many of you have a panga? Almost everybody raised their hand. And she said, oh, wait, let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. She counts like 30-something pangas and writes on the little chalkboard that they have there, 35 pangas. You have 35 bangas, and you were just telling me that you didn't have anything. What else do you have? And now the light bulbs go on.
Whoa.
And the people start talking about all kinds of things. Well, we have a teacher here, and we have, well, and it came even to the point where we have arms and we have legs. And every time they said anything, she wrote it on the board. And by the time this exercise was over, that board was filled. And now the people are excited. Because now they realize, whereas before they were in that deficit mode, that they had nothing. Now they realize they are rich. They are rich. They have so much. And now let's see what we can do with this. And from then on, you know, the process went on. That experience really impacted me. Saying it's not a question of theory and learning it in class about asset building, asset mapping. It is knowing how to do it and knowing how to listen and knowing how to elicit the information from people in a way that gives them new insight and vision to who they are.
Exactly.
And as I've been doing this kind of participatory action research in the last decade, I've just, that is all I do now. So I retired from the university 2 years ago to stop teaching and be able to do this in a more concentrated fashion. So, you know, when I have done it in Africa primarily, but also in the Philippines, in East Africa, and we have the trained now community researchers come back and tell me this is now in the case of evaluating the work of what's happening in the community when it's real when it's really development, when it's really transformation, when it really opens their eyes, they come back with a language that is biblical. They say, our eyes have been opened. We cannot go back. And even in a Muslim context, that's what's floored me, is that Muslims have said to my community researchers, our eyes are opened. And it's like once they have a new vision for what's possible, then they don't go back. Because
it's a spiritual experience, a spiritual conversion, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely. And it's because what happens is their own ability to do something about their lives becomes this conversion experience of themselves having gifts and talents and having knowledge. And then that becomes knowledge in service of the community. And it really brings me back to when I went to San Cristobal de las Casas and was with Gloria and the people there and went to visit that another world is possible.
Oh, sure. The Zapatistas.
The Zapatistas. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And every time I do something now, after that experience of being in San Cristobal, I always think of the Zapatistas because the way they did what, the way they started that was really by a lot of listening and going from community to community in their indigenous group and listening, you know, Comandante Marcos. You know, was just listening to what the people were saying about their community and then realizing, you know, another world is possible. And they began creating that other world that is possible. And that to me is what I want to see in the places where I work, that people get a vision for another world is possible. We don't have to keep it this way. And I'm hoping that the good of the pandemic is that it wakes up a lot of people here that another world is possible, that we don't have to continue the capitalistic, neoliberal way of life. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It hasn't worked. It doesn't work, right?
Yes, and as Pope Francis has said most very eloquently in his latest encyclical, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So another way is possible, and a different kind of economic reality is possible, and people are, it's not that we have to imagine it, we just have to look around to see what people are already doing, and we'll see lots of models.
We'll return momentarily to our conversation. In 2021, Jubilee One Earth Economics offers increased opportunities for meeting the people in the Jubilee circles in New Mexico and to create solidarity with them in their amazing work of empowering women, educating underserved peoples, and protecting the planet. Ask to be included in a solidarity call or plan to be part of the courses in the new Jubilee School. You can find more information on the website oneearthjubilee.com. Now we return to our conversation with Grace Durness.
Now I want you mentioned San Cristobal, and actually two podcast episodes back, I interviewed Lindsay Mercer Robledo, and then also Angelica Juarez in Jimenez in San Mateo, and I know that you also visited San Mateo, and you did at least a miniature version there of what you talked about and described at some length that Jan taught you in Manila, or at least in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. And that was very miniature, and it was a very thrilling experience for me. Most of the time, these are very thrilling experiences, particularly when I can understand the language. Mm-hmm. Because of Spanish being the language in San Mateo, it was especially meaningful to me. To sit down with a group of women in San Mateo from that barrio, and to listen to them, and a lot of them were facing abuse from their husbands. They were different kind, not just physical, but psychological abuse, and feeling trapped because they didn't have their own sources of income. And so in sitting around in the circles and beginning to elicit their stories and beginning to listen to their reality and then see them catch on to a possibility for what they could do together. And what happens in these, this has been true in research that has been done on self-help groups in India and all over, is that a lot of the time what the women say that is most important to them is the solidarity that develops between them, almost more than whatever income they generate. That it is knowing you have this group of people, and that is what, what we would call building social capital, right? That you're building a network of people, and you know who they are. Last year was unfortunately already before the pandemic. So that was 2019. I was invited to come down to Argentina. And there's a town where a lot of trafficking of young women takes place. And they take them out and lure them to Buenos Aires for supposedly to get better jobs, and then often end up being trafficked, even going overseas and so on. And this particular village has very beautiful and attractive people, and so that's why it's a magnet for traffickers. I was invited by a former doctoral student who was doing work there and wanted to use this as her doctoral dissertation project, that she had discovered that the church was right there on the main square and was totally oblivious to what was happening in the main square.
Wow.
And she was oblivious too. Like she happens to be a lawyer as well, so she's highly educated. But she began to discover that as she hung in the plaza, she would see all the people come there to sell their things, and their little girls are running around and everything. But as she spent time in the plaza, she began to realize that these were this was where they recruited, and they would pay the mothers because it's an income. We can pay you, and we'll take your daughter to Buenos Aires or whatever, and she will, you know, earn more money and can send it back to you and so on. And when you're in dire poverty situations, it's tempting, right? So what she wanted me to do was to help teach her how to go about doing this participatory action research methodology within another town adjacent. And so we went and we called together a group of women, and they came, and then we just began the whole process of saying, you know, what is it that you would like to offer here to that we could, what do you think are some of the solutions to this trafficking situation? And they said, well, if we had more income and things like that, we wouldn't be as tempted. And so we began by sending them out. We said, go find out in your community what's really going on, what's happening there, and what's available that you could think about. And come back and tell us all, and we'll write it all down. And they said, well, we know what's happening here. This is where we've lived all our lives, you know. We challenged them to go out with different eyes and different ears and gave them the tools to think about this. And they went out. To their surprise, the next day when we all gathered back, it wasn't to my surprise, because I knew that they would find new things. But they came back and they said, well, there was this lady, she's been my neighbor all my life, and I did not realize that she knows how to sew really well, and that she wants to be able to teach people how to sew. They had never talked about such a simple thing, right? And it's having this ability to listen and to have new eyes to look and listen and new ears to listen. And then coming back, they developed, within the course of a week, they were already developing strategies. And what they had were three new cooperatives that came out of that 1 week. One was on making chocolates and Easter eggs for Easter, that they found somebody who really knew how to do it and would sell it in the plaza, her little Easter eggs. So now that's a whole business that they're making those things. Another is the sewing with this one lady, how to make basic things, even if it's just for their children, but they also to try to sell. And then what's the third one? I think it was jewelry making. They all organize cooperatively, and that is similar to what's happened in San Mateo. Right, because the ladies in San Mateo began with a lovely thing of doing flower arrangements, and then they grew into, we want more expert training, and so they brought in someone who could really teach them how to do it better, and that's how your life can grow to the point where you're working collaboratively, but you're also developing your own self-awareness of who you are and of what you have within you that you can offer back to the community. that's where you begin to see flourishing, mm-hmm. right? Because they will not go back to the old ways, mm-hmm. because this way has been so liberating. And I think that's what I see as the future. Not these little pockets can grow and grow into mm-hmm. different little pockets. You know, I never dreamed that after 1 week in Argentina, mm-hmm. that three co-ops would come out of it, you know?
That's amazing in a very short time.
Yeah, exactly.
With people who are just really changed, you know, like you've said a number of times, they'll never go back. They're just different from...
Their eyes see things differently now.
I remember one thing that Angelica tells a story about a woman who was working in the San Mateo group that was talking about. She says, I didn't know I could do this, you know.
That's so beautiful. Huh?
And so their image of themselves changes. And of course they develop into the image of God in a fully personhood, their full personhood in a way that they couldn't have before. Grace, you get the last words, but our time is coming to an end here. So whatever you would like to say to kind of wrap it up or one more idea that you want to unfold, go ahead.
Well, just very quickly, I owe a lot to one of our Latin American leaders, really, and that's Paulo Freire. Mm-hmm. I owe a lot to him because he said that, you know, when you take decision making away from people and don't allow them to make their own decisions, in other words, make their own plans, plan their own strategies, develop their own ways of doing things, when you take that away and you do it for them, you are creating violence. It's a violent act against them because you're robbing them of this ability to have their eyes opened.
Wow.
You know, and that to me is so biblical, mm-hmm. you know, where Jesus doesn't come and offer all the solutions, but he asked the woman at the well, you know, can you give me a cup of water? Mm-hmm. He could have gotten his own water, but the fact that he asked her for something, what can you offer me? Mm. And basically all she can offer is a glass of water. And out of that grows such a deep relationship where she says, you know everything about me. And then she goes back and tells all the village, you've got to come and meet someone. Mm-hmm. He's taught me, he's shown me everything who I am.
Yeah.
I think we need to be bridges for people to reach that point where they see God as, you know, knows me, who I am, and has created me to be. Mm-hmm. And let me be that way. Don't let someone like me as an expert, sociologist, anthropologist, whatever, urban planner, come and offer the solutions to you. Mm-hmm. But rather, let me give you some tools so that you can develop your own solutions and therefore flourish. I don't want to rob them of that. And I think that is really what God is telling me to do from now until the end of my days, whenever they might be.
Well, you have communicated so much about how academia and activism can enrich each other if they're willing to.
Yeah.
And also how theology and personal understandings, you know, one's personal theology. I don't mean academic theology, really, just one's personal theology and spiritual awakening can all happen without using any of the theological language in biblical language. It just starts happening, and then you realize, oh, people are actually using the language of spiritual new life. And it's amazing.
Yeah. It's a God-given gift.
For people to be able
to open their eyes.
Are you working under the heading of the Urban Initiatives?
The Hub for Urban Initiatives, yeah.
Okay.
That's my place where I hang my hat now that I've retired from the university.
Okay. Well, yeah. We'll include that in the show notes so people can look you up there if they would like.
Absolutely.
That's another whole area that we didn't really talk about, but it sounds like a very exciting hub of ministry that you're part of there. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Grace.
Among
the many people I'm going to single out to listen to this will be the people in San Cristobal and San Mateo.
And one of these days I'll get back. I love them all. Just fantastic.
And they speak of you. So thank you so much for this time. And
thank you, Lee.
I know you're heading to Costa Rica soon to be with family over the holidays. And very best to
you. Lord willing. Thank you.
Continual presence of the Holy is with you, I know. And that's just beautiful.
Thanks so much, and have a wonderful Advent season. And last year I used your little book during Advent, so if you remember,
I do.
I was thinking about it the other day. Oh, this is what I used. Yeah, so
people are using it. I know this season too, and I'm involved in a couple of those. So
wonderful. Okay, all right. Thank you, Lee. Merry Christmas.
And to you as well.
You've been listening to Grace Durness and Lee Van Ham. Have you listened to our recent episodes? In October, Scott Klinger talked about maximizing justice over profits as a possibility. In November, how empowering women changes the world. In December, Will O'Brien on peace on earth and the politics of Christmas. Do listen. You're sure to pick up thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. You can subscribe to this podcast under the name Simple Living Works at your favorite podcast service. Individual episodes are available at Jubilee's new website, oneearthjubilee.com, and also simpleLivingWorks.org, window number 3. Urge your friends to do the same. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Learn to live simply so others can live.